Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. Well, we have a great program for you this afternoon. In fact, we're going to have one of the candidates that's running for the Ohio Treasurer's race, and that's Robert Sprague. He is currently state representative, and he'll be on your primary ballot on May 8th. But we want to make a program note, of course, those of you that are hearing us this afternoon. Tonight is the Spring Freedom Banquet of the Ohio Christian Alliance. And of course, there's just a little time left to register in the next hour or so before we close out registrations if you'd like to join us. And let me just say this, that tonight we're going to award State Representative Andy Thompson with the Ohio Christian Alliance Freedom Award for defending the state of Israel. And it will be presented to him tonight at the banquet for his outstanding legislative accomplishment on HCR 10, a resolution to condemn the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against the state of Israel, and to condemn increased incidents of anti-Semitism on Ohio college campuses. Representative Thompson led his fellow legislative members and his fellow Ohioans in an effort to speak out against the BDS movement and against the state of Israel and to address anti-Semitism as bigotry that should never be tolerated on college campuses or throughout society. This resolution passed the Ohio House earlier this year by a vote of 96-2. It is currently in the Ohio Senate, but we do have an update. Unfortunately, yesterday on Wednesday in the Transportation Committee, chaired by State Senator Frank LaRose, who wants to move the legislation, there was a little bit of an objection from the minority member on the committee, Senator Tavares, and she was really trying to object and derail the whole resolution. She wanted language inserted in there concerning white supremacists and Nazis, and the whole intent was just to derail this resolution that supports the state of Israel and speaks out against anti-Semitism. We phoned her office and asked her to support the resolution, and that the other concerns that she had certainly could be addressed in another piece of legislation. But this one has already passed the Ohio House and is well under its way in the Ohio Senate. I do believe it will pass committee and will pass off the Senate floor in a strong statement, of course, in this important time. Last week, of course, it was an International Day of Remembrance for all of those that were lost in the Holocaust 70 years ago. 6.5 million Jews perished in the Nazi Holocaust. And in that observance last week, a report was issued in which young Americans and actually young people across in Europe, in the United States, are increasingly unaware of what the Holocaust was. Let me read for you this excerpt. 2/3 of American millennials surveyed in a recent poll cannot identify what Auschwitz is, according to a study released on Holocaust Remembrance Day. 22% of millennials in the poll said they hadn't heard of the Holocaust or are not sure whether they have ever heard of it. Twice the percentage of U.S. adults as a whole who said the same. The study conducted by the Conference of Jewish Material Claims Against Germany interviewed 1,350 American adults in February and recruited by telephone in an online non-probability sample. Well, asked to identify what Auschwitz is, the 41% of the respondents and 66% of millennials could not come up with a correct response. That is appalling that our young people do not know what happened just 70 years ago in Europe with the wholesale slaughter of whole towns and villages of people just because of their Jewish heritage, also gypsies and other dissidents who perished in the Holocaust. This is really an outrage. Well, that's what we're doing at the Ohio Christian Alliance is education. And tomorrow night at the Freedom Banquet, that's what we're going to be addressing, or rather tonight at the Freedom Banquet. And so again, if you want to log on to our website at ohioca.org, and in fact, if you're not able to join with us, but you'd like to help us in our efforts, you can also make an online contribution as well as we carry out the ongoing education of who we are as a Christian people and who we are as an American republic. Well, with us on the phone is a fine state legislator and one which did vote for this resolution when it came through the Ohio House, Representative Robert Sprague, and he's running for Ohio Treasurer in both the May primary and, if he wins that, in the November election. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Chris. Glad to be here.
Well, thank you, sir. And, you know, obviously this is election time. The May 8th primary is coming up very quickly. And, of course, some people are casting their ballots already. Let me just ask you a couple of questions while we have you on the phone. Tell us why you're running for Ohio State Treasurer.
Well, you know, a lot of people look at the State Treasurer's office as purely a ministerial role. And, you know, that's partly true. It's obviously of paramount importance that we keep people's tax dollars safe and that everything goes flawlessly along with the office. And so you want to know a little bit about people's backgrounds. And, you know, one of the things about my background, having worked at Ernst & Young and also having my MBA and some business experience, I think it makes me well qualified to be able to run the office. But, you know, it's more than just a ministerial function. One of the things, you talked a little bit about Representative Thompson's resolution, the anti-BDS resolution, to help make sure that investment still is going to the state of Israel.
Yes.
One of the things that the state treasurer's office can do is invest in Israel bonds. And look, at a time when, you know, we've just seen in Syria and other parts of the Middle East such a tremendous amount of upheaval and discord and war. You know, we need to make sure that for our country's sake, that we're standing with Israel. Israel is our greatest ally in the Middle East, one of our longest allies in the Middle East, and then also, I think, arguably our greatest ally in the war on terror. And, you know, one of the things I want to do to support the state of Israel and to support President Trump, who has recently, as of, you know, just a few months ago, moved our embassy from Tel Aviv to the true capital of the state of Israel, to the city of Jerusalem. You know, as I plan, you know, I plan to invest more in Israel bonds. That's something that the state treasurer's office has the authority to be able to do. And along with this this anti-BDS legislation, we've worked in the House to be able to increase the amount of Israel bonds that the state of Ohio is allowed to buy.
That's right.
You know, that's an important component of the treasurer's office. How do we invest our money?
Well, that's right. And, of course, Treasurer Josh Mandel has been in support of that. So you would be continuing in the same kind of work that he's been engaged with on that issue, and an important issue, as we had a contingent of representatives, both Democrat and Republican, who went on a trip to Israel because it's an important economic partner for the state of Ohio as well. And there is a economic exchange and trade between the two nations. So that's a great point you bring up.
Absolutely. Not only is there trade between the two nations, but the reality is right now, just because interest rates are so low and here domestically, in some cases, we can get better returns for the taxpayers of the state of Ohio by investing in Israel bonds than we can get investing in domestic paper. Mm. And we want to do what's best for the taxpayers, make sure that we get the best return on our investment portfolio that we can for the taxpayers of the state of Ohio.
Well, that's a great point. Well, also, tell us a little bit about your family and the community in which you reside in, and we'd love to know about that.
Well, yeah, I reside in Findlay, Ohio, with my wife, Amanda, and our five children. Our oldest is 16. We have four little boys, and then we have a little girl at the end who is 6 years old, just lost her second tooth today. So that's a little bit about our family. And, you know, I think from coming from Northwest Ohio and having a big family like that, you probably tell that, you know, I'm interested in pro-life issues and have worked hard in those in the legislature. In trying to protect life in our state. And that's something else I think that actually the treasurer's office can participate in an indirect way.
Ohio is in competition with its border states right now for economic growth and investment with corporations that are looking to move headquarters out of California, quite honestly, where the tax rates are way too high and the cost of doing business is incompatible with the bottom line and profitability. So they're looking to move to other states. Some have moved to Texas, some have moved to Florida, but they're also looking for the resources in the Midwest, where we have water resources, we have plenty of energy, we have lots of space to grow and or build construction facilities, and also we have a knowledgeable workforce. What do you see is the biggest problem or challenge facing Ohio right now?
Well, I think there's a number of things, and I think, you know, it's important that we look forward 5 years, 10 years down the road at our state. How do we become more strategically competitive? How do we maintain our preeminence, not just in the United States, but worldwide? And I think this workforce issue is one of the main components. You know, in 2011, when I entered the legislature, we had an 11% unemployment rate and an $8 billion budget deficit. And this made it unattractive to come and relocate your business in the state of Ohio for a number of reasons, one of which was the tax burden. And what we've done is over the last 7 years is really reduced the tax burden, reduced the regulatory burden in the state of Ohio. And as a result of those policies, the very forward-looking policies, in addition to creating Jobs Ohio, which is one of the preeminent job-creating mechanisms now in the United States for the state of Ohio here, is that, you know, now we've got a situation where the economy is rolling along at such a fast clip that literally if you had everybody in the state of Ohio that is currently unemployed take a job, we still would have a few thousand jobs open. And so there's a gap that's opened up in terms of both skills, and we need to do a better job to make sure that our young people are able to have the right skills as they graduate from high school to go directly into the workforce in a lot of cases. You know, a lot of people are, you know, we've for a long time neglected the skilled trades and told everyone that they need to go to college in order to be successful. But the reality is, in Ohio here, well, 53% of the jobs that pay more than $100,000 do not require a college degree. And in many cases, skilled tradesmen not just have a job, but they really have a career, and they end up owning their own business. They're entrepreneurs and business people. And we've got to do a better job of making sure in high school, and this is something I think is a financial literacy problem, in high school that kids understand and have a clear line of sight as to what the market is paying for, what employers want in terms of job skills, so that those high school kids can get those skills. And then if college is your path, great. But let's give you a little bit of financial literacy before you go off to college so that you don't graduate with this crippling amount of student loan debt that is a burden on so much of the millennial generation now.
Well, that's a great point you bring up, because, you know, when the presidential campaign was raging in 2016, a lot of young people were looking at Bernie Sanders because he was talking about eliminating college debt. Of course, a socialistic plan. You can't have other people pay for the debts that you've incurred. But yet, young people need to have something to look forward to of job productivity and advancement so that they can pay down the investment they made in education, and many of them are carrying unnecessary burden of college debt, and not everybody needs to go to college. And that is echoing what would be your predecessor. Of course, Josh Mandel has been trumpeting that cause of the trades, and we're going to need electricians, we're going to need plumbers, we're going to need welders, carpenters, people who are involved in auto mechanic work. All of that kind of, and these are good paying jobs, by the way, and are in great demand right now across the board. There's going to be a lot of retirement, as you talked about, and so there's going to be a lot of need for this. In fact, our local high school in Barberton, the superintendent, he was the principal of the high school. What kept him going instead of retiring was he got a real encouragement about working with the local community college, Stark Tech, in this kind of arrangement of those who would be going to training for the trades and actually working with local businesses. I need to circle back with him, and he's now the superintendent of Barberton Schools, but I'm sure he's still hands-on with this pilot program, and I think it's one in which we need to take a look at that we can expand that at high schools across the state and bring back shop class, but being more specific, as you're saying, what will employers need and what will they want for work, the workforce, as time goes on and as we evolve in this new climate of the economy. So those are great points. One other point I want to bring up with you, Treasurer Josh Mandel launched a new program called Checkbook Ohio. It was wildly popular among folks across the state, a lot of Tea Party or conservative groups. He launched a transparency project in communities that chose to participate. And how it would work is that they would log in and work with his central platform, and it was basically transparency of how the expenditures were being dispersed in municipalities and counties across the state, and it's been a very wildly popular program so that the taxpayers can actually see the itemization of how the monies are being spent locally, and I think that kind of transparency really resonated with a lot of people. Will you continue and encourage that kind of project as well?
Let me tell you, there's no better way to restore trust in government and trust in what's happening in Columbus than to put sunshine into the expenditures of the state. Sunshine is a great disinfectant. And let me tell you, what Josh Mandel has done in terms of putting the Treasurer's Office of the state of Ohio really on the forefront in the entire United States of this transparency initiative, so that you can go on now and look at anything in Ohio's checkbook, is absolutely trend-setting. And we are not just going to continue the open checkbook that Josh Mandel has done a great job initiating, but with my background at Ernst & Young and my knowledge of finance, the other thing I'd love to do is be able to also make it not just an open checkbook, but make it a smart checkbook so that, as taxpayers want to see, is there some benchmarking that we can do to see if Ohio's expenditures are on par with Illinois or Indiana's, or how do we compare with some other government entities? How are our tax dollars really being used so that people can see if their government is being efficient? So putting some analytical tools on top of that wonderful open checkbook to make it a smart checkbook as well.
Well, it has received national acclaim, that's for sure, and it's a great program. I'm encouraged to know that if you're elected, that you'll continue the program and actually expand it. As I've heard Josh speak to local community groups across the state, people were very encouraged by that and just applauded him. And again, it did receive national recognition, because I think one of the things, as you mentioned, Representative, is so important is that transparency. That leads to good government in the end of the day. Very good. We're talking with State Representative Robert Sprague, who's running for Ohio State Treasurer. He'll be on the May 8th primary. He does have a primary challenge. And again, if that will be on May 8th, but if you're casting a ballot early as well, that's available at your local Board of Elections. And some people are voting early. But I think early ballots on the Republican side, Representative, are not pouring in, as it were. But, of course, a lot of people like to vote on Election Day, including me. I think I did once when I was going to be traveling, I cast an early ballot. Other than that, I like to go in on Election Day. I think that's what a lot of people, their preferences are.
Well, I think this is true. And I think that we will have a lot of people that show up on Election Day. And I think it's important. It's really important to get out and vote. And because what's at stake here? It's not the past, not where we've been in the state of Ohio, but really what's at stake here is our future as a state. So I think that, as you look, you're a little bit like what Wayne Gretzky used to say. Wayne Gretzky used to say, I skate to where the puck's going to be, not where the puck is. And I think, as we look at the strategic challenges that our state has and where we need to go next to be successful, there's a number of key issues that we need to address, one of which we've already talked about, the workforce issue. I think a second piece that's absolutely critical is the state of addiction in Ohio. You know, we're ground zero, unfortunately, for the heroin epidemic. And this type of evil really is being pulled in with fentanyl from illicit labs in both China and Mexico and brought to Ohio and distributed throughout our state. And it's a major problem.
That's right. And, of course, there's been our attorney general has addressed this issue. We've had legislation in the legislature as well. Our community law enforcement officials and community counselors are really burdened by and overloaded with the opiate addiction crisis that's rampaging Ohio. I'm glad you brought that up because that it's part of your thoughts and concerns, because as an elected official and if running for state treasurer, I mean, this is something that's going to bog us down. If you have a large portion of your population that it's addicted to drugs and their lives have been derailed and sidelined, and of course it does cost a lot on the local level for addiction recovery, for law enforcement, for even child care, for instance, and those entering into the foster care system because of the breakup of the home. It has so many complexities and problems to it, and I agree with you. As a faith leader, of course, we're encouraging churches, pastors to get involved, to be proactive, to reach out to the addict and their family and their needs, and with counseling and recovery programs and, you know, to be available to them. And that's happening, but there's so much more that needs to be done. I appreciate you bringing that up. I have another question here for you. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to make a quick comment on that. I think, you know, as we go around the state and we look at individuals that are in recovery, it's pretty amazing. It truly is like the prodigal son and getting a second bite at the apple and a second chance at life. And one of the things that we face as a state, which is just remarkably low recovery rates for heroin addiction. Our recovery rate's only about 11% statewide. And we're not going to be able to dig out of a heroin epidemic with an 11% recovery rate. But one of the things I'd like to see the state do is standardize something called the social impact bond. And this is where we actually pay for programs in the private sector. You know, one of the rules of government is obviously the separation of church and state. And so when we talk about recovery, there's a big God component to recovery and the belief in God and God helping individuals that are struggling with an addiction each and every day as they step through life. And sometimes that's difficult for public financing and because of the separation of church and state. And so what this social impact bond would do is it would say to the private sector, look, just show us, run a 2-year pilot program with whatever you feel like is going to work to increase our recovery rates in the state of Ohio. And if you're able to show after a 2-year pilot program that you get 3 times the normal recovery rates, say instead of an 11% recovery rate, you're able to get a 33% recovery rate, then the state will buy back that $1 million bond that you used to run the 2-year pilot program at the end of that 2-year period. So it's an innovative financing concept where the state's only paying for things that work, and we push out into the private market the ability for us to try new types of heroin addiction treatment in the state of Ohio and things that are actually going to have an impact.
We're talking with State Representative Robert Sprague. He has been my guest this segment. He is running for state treasurer in the Ohio primary. The Ohio Christian Alliance provides this candidate forum for educational purposes only. We do not endorse or support any political party or candidate. We hope you've enjoyed this educational forum with State Representative Robert Sprague, again, who is a candidate for Ohio state treasurer. Representative, thank you. What is your campaign site again, quickly?
Thank you. It's www.spragueforohio.com.
Very good. Well, thank you for being our guest today. God bless you, sir.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Chris. God bless you.
All right. Very good. Well, stay with us on the other side, and we'll be talking with Matt Staber from Liberty Council. We'll be right back.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association. This year marks the 70th anniversary of the founding of the State of Israel. President Trump announced earlier this year that the United States will be moving its embassy to Jerusalem in recognition of the Jewish capital. A special recognition of this historic event will be featured at the Ohio Christian Alliance annual Spring Freedom Banquet on Thursday, April 19th at the Akron Fairlawn Hilton. Keynote speaker is former RNC Faith Outreach Director Chad Connolly, who rallied the faith vote for a historic turnout in the 2016 presidential election. If you support the State of Israel and believe it's time to defend religious liberty, then join us and register for the Ohio Christian Alliance annual Spring Freedom Banquet by logging on to ohioca.org or phone 330-887-1922. That's ohioca.org or phone 330-887-1922.
Very good, and we're back, and we're glad that you're with us. And with me on the phone is Matt Staver. He is the founder and chairman of Liberty Council, which is a First Amendment advocate group that defends religious liberty. And they have a action press release they just put out about Mike Pompeo, the President Trump's nominee for the as Secretary of State, in his treatment before the U.S. Senate committee, which has been appalling by some Democratic members who have actually excoriated Mr. Pompeo because of his Christian beliefs. Folks, this is alarming. I mean, when we consider the United States of America that was founded upon religious liberty and our First Amendment rights, when we consider how these nominees are being treated and excoriated on Senate committees in the U.S. House, is really an outrage. And, you know, with us on the phone is Matt Staver, again, chairman of Liberty Council, to talk about this release he put out this afternoon. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thank you. My pleasure to be with you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for, you know, putting out this information. In fact, we're going to be sending it on to our folks as well. And Senator Cory Booker's treatment of the nominee has just been unforgivable. I mean, this kind of excoriating and just ridicule of Christian beliefs on the committee, is there's no place for that. And, you know, really, it should be shamed into oblivion. And I agree with your point here, is that there should be consideration for him to, one, apologize proficiently, but also possible resignation. I mean, we've already had resignations last year by Al Franken because of his treatment of women with the Me Too movement. But this was people within his own movement and his own party who were pushing him out the door and saying, we don't want you representing us anymore. He was the former senator from the state of Minnesota. This gentleman's conduct in the way in which he's treated Mr. Pompeo, I would equally agree, is appalling. Your thoughts?
I think it is appalling. He needs to apologize or resign. If he or someone else had done something that is clearly racist, like it is anti-religious and bigotry here in his anti-Christian statements, they would have been forced to resign. We can't just simply allow people like this in the United States Senate, where this is televised and it's been repeated around the country and even for people around the world to see, where this United States senator berates a good man, Mike Pompeo, the former director of the CIA with lots of other experience, being nominated for the Secretary of State, and he berates him because of his Christian views. And he belittles him, or tries to, because of his Christian views. And he attacks him because of his belief and understanding and support of marriage as the union of a man and a woman. Tens and tens of millions of people in America believe exactly the same thing. So he has not only berated and demeaned and showed his bigotry against Mike Pompeo for his Christian beliefs, but also against many, many Americans, and including the very founding principles of this country, including the very Constitution that he has sworn to uphold. He needs to apologize, and or he needs to resign. Mike Pompeo is a good man. He should be confirmed. You know, with all of the issues that a Secretary of State will face around the world, instead of focusing on those, this Senator Booker made a fool out of himself, and he brought shame to himself and to the United States Senate by berating Mr. Pompeo's Christian faith.
Mr. Pompeo is actually a very accomplished gentleman in his own right. He is the former CIA director. He was already approved by the U.S. Senate for to be the CIA director in years previous. He has an illustrious military career, a professional career. He's a man of integrity and great skill. And for him to be treated like this before the Senate committee is an outrage. Folks, it's an outrage if you take it upon yourself to call that Senate committee and let them know that you want them to approve President Trump's nominee for the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. Many people have been saying just how skillful, knowledgeable, and a man of integrity that he is, actually a man who's needed. One of the things I thought that was interesting and important, that he said that I will fill the positions that have been left open from my predecessor, and he's talking about Mr. Trump's first Tillerson, the first Secretary of State nominated. I think he was a gentleman that came in from the business world. He may not have understood the complexities of the State Department. The State Department, of course, it needs the personnel. You need nations to be talking to each other on many levels. That's how crises and problems are averted. If you have staff throughout the Secretaries of State or the State Department's facilities to be able to communicate with nations, this is how we have good standing around the world. So I agree with him that we need to fill these positions. I've talked to a number of people, Matt, over the last year and a half about this kind of challenging problem. I'm glad that Mr. Trump has nominated Mr. Pompeo. What is your thought and sense now about his approval on the committee? Where are we? In fact, I heard Senator Cotton saying, well, we don't need the Senate committee. The Senate body as a whole is not restricted by the thought of the committee. So even if they turn him down, the whole Senate can pick it up and still confirm him. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a close vote on the Senate, because I think obviously you're going to see a number of Democrats do a lockstep vote, which they have been typically doing. And you might actually have a Republican ultimately vote against him, which, you know, we'll see what happens. But we don't need the Senate committee. He already has gone through the Senate committee, already has been approved by that Senate committee, approved by the United States Senate as director of the CIA. So that is a very important, critical position.
I see somebody like Joe Manchin, who's in a very tight race down there in West Virginia. He's going to have to vote for this nominee. If he does that, he could just kiss goodbye his seat.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he might jump ship, and he's the most likely Democrat to jump ship from that Democratic lockstep that they've been doing since President Trump has been the president of the United States. But he's one of those who might just actually bail on the Democratic caucus there. And then, you know, if there's not a unanimous or there's not a majority vote in the Senate committee, we don't need the Senate committee, because the president of the Senate can put it up for vote with the full Senate. And I think he deserves that full vote of the United States Senate. He already has had a full vote just, you know, within the last year of the United States Senate that ultimately confirmed him as director of the CIA. So he's back again for a different position. He's highly qualified, as you already mentioned, and I think that he'll pass when he gets to the United States Senate.
Well, with us on the phone is Matt Staver, again, the chairman of Liberty Council, an organization that we, of course, at the Ohio Christian Alliance have depended on for over the years to give us this kind of key information on legal matters. And much is going on in Washington right now, Matt. In fact, our folks on the ground here in Ohio, grassroots folks, are actually quite concerned when we saw the president's own personal attorney's offices raided by the FBI office in Manhattan. The same office, by the way, that sat on their hands during the Clinton Foundation investigation and during her troubles with her personal server that was in violation of federal law. They sat on their hands. They conducted no raids at that time. Yet when it comes to the president's personal attorney, this quite honestly, KGB-type tactic in the middle, early in the morning at four of his locations, is his apartment, his offices, and his home. You know, it was former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich who said it was a KGB-type tactic. I mean, it's alarming and scary to a lot of us out here because we think about attorney-client privilege and privacy of what our First Amendment, our constitutional rights. We're seeing them eroded in front of our eyes. Your thoughts?
Yeah, we are. I think it's outrageous, and it shows the depths of the deep state. You know, President Donald Trump, when he ran for office, said he wanted to drain the swamp, and that's what he's been trying to do. I think, unfortunately, what we are seeing is the swamp is worse than we even thought it was. And it's deep embedded into the FBI and into parts of the Department of Justice, even into the Department of State. And there's lots of these career people that think that they're going to run the country, no matter who is elected, no matter what the people say as the Democratic vote. And this here, whenever you raid someone like this in an early morning dawn raid, and you're doing it against an attorney, scooping up attorney-client privileges with individuals who have nothing to do with what the raid was allegedly about, that is an extraordinary, very heavy-handed, it is a very militaristic, third-world kind of KGB kind of approach. And we're seeing that happen in the United States of America. And yet the same FBI, with the former director, James Comey, you can see how some of those individuals, Peter Strzok, his other lover that he is texting back and forth with, Mr. Orr, and now you have James Comey, you can see the level of hatred that they have for conservatives, people of Judeo-Christian values, pro-lifers, Christians, and obviously President Donald Trump. And so they're doing everything in their power to ultimately undermine the President of the United States and, frankly, the people's vote. I think it is shocking. I think that this special counsel investigation has gone way off the rails. They haven't found anything, otherwise they would have done something regarding
right.
so-called Russian collusion, which is not a crime anyway. There is no such thing as saying this is a crime to collude with Russia. To investigate, to even assign a special counsel to investigate, you have to investigate a specific crime. There is no crime called or even suggesting that collusion is a crime. And so the very premise of this and then where it's going and the heavy-handed tactics, and when they haven't found anything anyway, and then when they don't go after Hillary Clinton for clear information that she was behind the dossier, that she funded it, that they presented, even now James Comey says, uncooperated information to the special FISA court. To this day, it's not corroborated. And then from all of that, you have this heavy-handed raid on President Trump's personal attorney. It is outrageous. It's incomprehensible. Frankly, that this is happening in the United States of America.
Well, that's right. We're talking with Matt Staver, again, the chairman of Liberty Counsel. We're talking about the legal challenges we see to our Constitution and our balance of powers. You know, Matt, when I looked at the federal judge, obviously, that they went to in New York for the appeal of getting the documents back. We're talking about this attorney. He had his files taken away. I mean, you as an attorney, you can imagine if they raided the offices of the Liberty Counsel and took all your documents and all everything you're working on. I mean, I don't know if the general public understand the complexity and the challenge to all of this.
Yeah, I mean, you, as an attorney, you've got dates and you've got times and you've got places, you've got things you have to respond to. And when your files are completely taken like that, and there's attorney-client privilege information in there, I mean, we have the attorney-client privilege for a reason, to protect the confidential communications between an attorney and the client. And it's there and it's been longstanding, and we need to respect that. But here, when that is violated, and also when information in your file, when you don't have it there and you don't know what it is that is the next step you're supposed to respond to, your malpractice, your professional ability to work as an attorney is literally put in jeopardy, because you're now, you know, the client, you're supposed to still represent the client. How can you continue to represent the client properly when you don't have the information in the client's file? You can't. So this is a real serious intrusion. That's why you almost never see this. Maybe in a rare, rare situation, you might see it in the case of real information over longstanding time where the mafia attorney has become part of the actual mafia itself and is no longer just representing the
client.
And that's not the case.
When doesn't cooperate and obstructs, kind of what the FBI,
right.
Justice Department's been doing, is obstructing not Congress and not giving him files. But
exactly.
Mr. Cohen was cooperating with the feds. He was communicating. He was cooperating. There was no need for this thuggery raid. I don't understand it, Matt.
The president has been cooperating with lots of documents that they've been requesting. Michael Cohen was cooperating. It wasn't like he was resisting. It wasn't like he was a flight risk. He's not going anywhere. And yet, at the same time, guess who is stonewalling? It is Rod Rosenstein.
Yes.
And it's the FBI. You know, the FBI couldn't find Peter Strzok's text messages. That they're lost. Well, the Inspector General found them, and the FBI couldn't. Peter Strzok has had these subpoenas outstanding for months by the Congress and hasn't responded to them. Why has he not responded to them? What is it in there that he does not want to reveal?
Right.
So, you know, they're the ones that are obstructing justice and dragging their feet, not Michael Cohen. And they had no business doing what they did to him. I think everyone in America ought to be outraged over this.
Absolutely. And Lisa Page was Peter Strzok's, love interest there.
Right.
And they both work at the Justice Department, the FBI.
They still work there.
And they were obviously Clinton supporters. It was evident. It was made known in the text messages. And they felt that they had to save the country from Donald Trump. When you do that, that's when you're shown the door. But because of the bureaucratic level of their protection, they still have security clearance. Matt, most people are pulling their hair out. They can't understand that. How these people that jeopardized and compromised their positions of authority still have security clearance. How is that happening?
I don't know. I think that, you know, the president can do certain things, and yet at the same time, I think a lot of people just need to be cleaned out. And he's doing what he can to clean out the swamp. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is the swamp is worse. And, you know, when James Comey came out with this book, and he says the things that he says, and he now admits that he's done things based upon political polls with regards to Hillary Clinton,
yep,
that he hasn't corroborated the document that they presented to the FISA court, that they never told the court, and they never told President Trump when he met with him, that this was a document financed by Hillary Clinton. And although he's never corroborated it, even he said this in his interview, now he says, well, maybe some of it is true. We don't know. And this is not becoming of the top investigative agency of the United States of America,
right.
Federal Bureau of Investigation. If they're going to treat the president this way, and they're going to think that way out loud on national television and write books about what they really think, the hatred that they think about President Donald Trump, you know, his wife and his kids were all supporters of Hillary. They attended the women's so-called march, which was a pro-abortion march, in protesting the part of the resistance movement, the Comeys are. This is the guy who's supposed to be a neutral. He can have his views, but don't let him cloud or sneak into your law enforcement or your objective investigation. And unfortunately, that's exactly what has happened with him, Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, and so many others in the FBI and the DOJ. And now they're still, even though President Trump won the election, they're still using those engines of power to persecute President Trump and go after him for unsubstantiated claims and anyone associated with him, like his personal lawyer, like some of these other individuals that there's nothing that they found in them regarding so-called Russian interference with the elections. So they try to get them in a meeting, get them to say one thing, and try to twist it so they can go after them for other things that are completely unrelated. It is outrageous, and you know, the sooner this gets cleaned up, the better, because if they're going to do this to the President of the United States and anyone that's associated with him, imagine what they'll do to you and me. Mm. We don't have the platform or the ability to fight back, like, say, the President does or some other people, and frankly, other people are losing their homes. You know, Michael Flynn is losing his home. He's financing his home to pay the legal bills.
For his legal bills, right.
And guess who was the person who interviewed him? Peter Strzok, who hated him or anything associated with President Trump. It's a cycle that you would think, and you know, they're saying, well, Russia colluded in the elections, how terrible that is, and certainly if that were, or they try to influence the elections, how terrible it is. But yet, this is the kind of thing that is in the former KGB mentality. This is what would happen there, where they would use the force of government to crush individuals to the point of oblivion, and you would have no ability to fight back.
This is what's so disconcerting and alarming to so many of us, Matt, is because we're looking at two different levels of law. The law that we all have to abide by and honor, and then there's a different level for those at the Justice Department, higher levels of government. It doesn't apply to them. Hillary Clinton. This Andrew McCabe lied 3 times to the FBI, as documented now. Martha Stewart went to prison for lying to the FBI. She served
and
time.
Guess who was part of that investigation? James Comey with Martha Stewart. James Comey. So James Comey has lied, and Andrew McCabe has lied. The Inspector General has come out and said he's lied multiple times. Why doesn't the department, why don't they come after Andrew McCabe for the same kind of thing that they put Martha Stewart away for?
Why is our good friend Jeff Sessions, an honorable man, the first thing he did when he got there was to recuse himself? And I do think he should have informed the president that in the event that that comes up, I'm going to have to recuse myself. Then the president could have chosen somebody else. What now can he do? I don't think he needs to keep recusing himself or broadening his own recusal to these things. Why is he sitting on his hands, Matt? What's going on?
I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. He is a good man, but I certainly wish that he would be more aggressive on some of these things. He recused himself. I didn't think he had to, first of all.
Right.
I think it was premature to do that, number one. Number two, he recused himself regarding the issue of Russian alleged intervention in the election. But that has nothing to do, as you know, they've not found anything. And that has nothing to do with Hillary Clinton's emails or Peter Strzok or Andrew McCabe lying or the FISA issue. You know, there's lots of other things where this special counsel thing went way beyond looking at this issue of
they always do though that's the nature of a special counsel,
and there and he has no potential reason to not be involved in there. He ought to reinsert himself in that because Rod Rosenstein doesn't have any business overseeing it. We already know he's been involved, and he doesn't have clean hands himself. If anybody ought to recuse, it's Mueller, who was involved in the Uranium One with Clinton.
Yes.
And also Peter, Rod Rosenstein. He was involved in repeatedly presenting undocumented dossier to the FISA court regarding that ultimately started their surveillance of people associated with President Donald Trump.
All right. We've covered the problem of where we're at to date. And thank you for covering and answering a lot of our questions here, Matt. We're talking with Matt Staver, chairman of Liberty Counsel. But Matt, I think what's curious right now is the inspector general What's very curious and what's been interesting, there where there's been other leaks out of the Justice Department when it's been about the memo or the request of files and these kinds of things, there's been no leaks from the Inspector General's report. He started to deliver his account. I think that's actually a good sign that he's got that locked down. They don't know what's in it. And I say if Rod Rosenstein is implicated in that report, that's when he should be fired. And then that's a new assistant secretary of state needs to be, attorney general needs to be appointed. And at that point, maybe we can start getting down to the business of justice in this country again. Your thoughts?
You know, I agree. The Inspector General has done a superb job. He has not made public comments. And guess what? There has not been one single leak. You know what's been happening with Mueller? We've had leak after leak after leak after leak. We know allegedly what they're doing, who they're interviewing, what their next step is before it actually happens. The FBI was intentionally leaking things. Andrew McCabe intentionally leaked, and James Comey intentionally leaked his memo so that a special counsel could be appointed. And guess what? His friend, Rod Rosenstein, appointed a special counsel because of Comey's leaked memo. So the Inspector General, I think, is doing a great job. I think that I'm anticipating a report that's going to be pretty startling regarding the Inspector General's thorough review of the issues surrounding Rod Rosenstein and some of these other issues that we've been talking about. I think that's the way these government agencies ought to operate. They can have their own personal views, but they ought to just stick to the law and stick to the facts and present them as they are and let the chips fall where they may. And unfortunately, we've seen too many that either ignore the facts or they try to distort the facts and they use the force of their agency to persecute people.
Well, my guest has been Matt Staver, who is the chairman of Liberty Counsel. You can find them on the web at lc.org, and they are great when it comes to advocating for religious liberty. There are so many ways in which you help us out in the Christian community and with our First Amendment rights. Thank you, Matt. God bless you, my friend.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you. We're going to have Matt here to Northeast Ohio. We'll work that out in the future. And I know that just from today's interview that you are interested as much as I am. But again, you can follow their work at lc.org. If you've missed any of today's program, you could always catch it in its entirety at the Ohio Christian Alliance website. Just Google Ohio Christian Alliance or go to ohioca.org. If you like what you're hearing in this program, you'd like to contribute to the ongoing work of News in Focus. We come to you each week at the same time. You can make a contribution online again at our website at ohioca.org or just Google Ohio Christian Alliance. Thank you so much for listening and God bless. Good night.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.